It's been a long week. Do we ever get to the end of the week and say, wow, that really flew by? Not very often. We don't say that much. I'm engaging you guys. We don't say that very much, do we? Hello. Good morning.
Okay, we didn't have enough coffee.
You're not enough. Okay, so it's been, let's start again. It's been a long week.
Yes, it has.
We spun some vinyl, played the cello, partied maybe a bit too much in Athens and for some of you last night. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of really smart people to help us sort of kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time. Time for the break room.
Just do it! Yes, you can! Just do it!
Loving you is work, Jerry. Hard work. Like building a homeless shelter. Nobody wants to say no to doing it, but some people put the work in.
Help! Help us! We're drowning!
Okay, joining us in the break room are Nzanga Burton. She is a media and hip-hop scholar. Hector Fernandez is a professor of world languages and cultures at Georgia State University. Natalie Pavelski is vice president of Cater Communications. And Greg Williams is with us. He's a mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Welcome, everyone.
Morning. Good morning.
Happy Friday.
Nzanga, break some news here. You're a professor. You're changing your life. Break this news on the program this morning.
So sadly, I'm leaving the University of Georgia, yes. Grady College of Journalism and Mass Media, and headed to...
Happily,
chair the Department of Mass Media Arts at Clark Atlanta University, wow. The illustrious program over there.
Yeah, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Changing your life. We
changing
love that.
My life. Excited.
All right, you ready to dive in?
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely.
How much do you trust artificial intelligence?
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that. I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Well, Alexa. Now, where did that come from? Where that clip? Was that an alien clip? Was that?
No,
what was
no.
That?
2001,
Space Odyssey.
Stanley, yes.
That's how.
That's old
slap
school.
Slap the host. Bad host. So, Alexa, the voice of Amazon's popular AI, called the cops. You guys have been following this story. A man in New Mexico was allegedly beating his girlfriend. Alexa thought she heard a command and summoned the police, who arrived to help the woman and her son. Here's the question. Should those gadgets be programmed to recognize violence in a home, or is that a kind of a slippery slope toward a brave new world? And before we dive in, I should add, so that's the story we've been reading about, but Amazon and a National 911 Association, well, they're kind of throwing buckets and buckets of cold water on the story, saying it could not have unfolded the way it's described here by the sheriff of this county in New Mexico. Right. But the question is still a good one. Greg, let me start with you. You've got that system in your home.
My brother was nice enough to give me the CIA listening device, and we've installed it. I joke about it a lot. So I have Alexa, and my wife is from Ecuador, so now I have two Latinas that don't listen to a word I say.
Oh!
You're a Latino, my friend. But
And we're off and running.
When I first read this story, obviously the headline is pretty scary, but you actually, to control Alexa, and my wife, I love hearing her fight with Alexa after a couple of glasses of wine. So try to get Alexa to play music, and you have to say Alexa, and that will actually initiate the system, and it'll flash up a little bit, and then you have to give it a command. So unless this guy's wife or girlfriend or whoever it was, name was Alexa, then I find it really hard to believe that it somehow would have magically
triggered
this.
You have to program this right, with contacts?
Yeah.
Although
on the 9/11 tape, they said, 911 tape, they said that they heard her say, saying, Alexa, call 911, Alexa, call 911.
Okay.
And that, I think, could actually be useful. Yes. But just sort of some general program to recognize violence, that I do not trust. Okay, I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The other day, I dropped a dish in the kitchen. My four-year-old comes running in, Mommy, Mommy. I'm like, stay out. And she's like, ah. So if Alexa recognized that as glass breaking and people shouting and sent SWAT, we would have been in trouble.
Right, yes. But there again, you've got to program, is it certain words, keywords, program 911 in the system so it does this connection to make that happen?
Well, most
I'm
people...
I'm confused about it all.
So you can program program, and I have an Alexa, which I actually unplugged immediately after the second story. Yes. Yeah, because I have a 20-month-old. So, yeah, I was like, I do not want the police called on me when I and a puppy. Yeah, oh, it's chaos in my house. It's chaos in my house. So, yeah, I think that, you know, when people buy Alexa, I wasn't looking for a listening device, right? So I think if you can make the command, yes, Alexa, call 911, then you should be able to do that. But I don't really want a device in my house listening for what I'm doing so that they can intervene in my life. I think it's a privacy issue. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Where do you come down on this, Hector?
Well, the machine is on most of the time. The microphone is on most of the time. That said, whether we like it or not, it's going to happen.
The listening device.
Yeah.
That's Greg's point. The listening device.
Yeah, it is a listening device at home. But it works a lot better than Siri. I said, I've tried both devices, and Alexa does work well.
Right.
Unlike Siri. But, I mean, at this point, I think it's too early for us to reach that point of device policing us, even though the microphone is on all the time.
Yeah. Right, well, and you just don't want it trying to interpret an activity or try to read our minds, for God's sake. I mean, it's like Skynet being self-aware from the Terminator movies. And it's, I mean, I was joking about unplugging it. We use Alexa for music. I've used it to order Uber before. But it is, I mean, you really, in order to trigger ours, so to speak, you have to say Alexa, and then it kind of pauses. So I don't... I think that's the voice activation. It does keep a transcript of every command you put in there, though. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And I was not joking. I did unplug it. I put it back in the box, and I'm going to throw it into the nearest trash can.
I'll lie from you.
Or into the nearest ocean.
Yes.
Being in the ocean. Oh,
nice
wasn't that
segue,
cute? Wasn't
Tony.
That cute? Being in the ocean can be a matter of life or death.
Because there may come a time when difficult decisions must be made.
What difficult decisions? What are you talking about?
You know, like things you do to stay alive.
Are you talking about killing and eating me, Frank?
All I'm saying is that when you go into survival mode, it's every man for himself.
Last weekend in Florida. Now, this was really scary, right? A family of six trapped in a dangerous riptide or rip current, or we can use, they're interchangeable.
Rip current is the
correct term. That's what I'm thinking. Yes. Right. This was off Panama Beach. No lifeguards on duty. Beachgoers, and this is terrific, formed, it's like an 80-person human chain to actually reach the family. And it was this family and others who were trapped as well and saved them all. You know, so there are a lot of interesting elements to this story. But Natalie, for you, what's the most interesting?
The most surprising thing is that it worked.
I mean,
a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, right? And for 80 people in Panama City on a Saturday evening to be sober and competent and strong and trusting enough to pull this off is remarkable.
I don't know if this is a sober idea, though. I mean, they're like, hey,
we're talking about a rip current.
Let's do this, guy. Finally, they remade an episode of Baywatch. It was actually worth watching.
Oh, my.
Or was this also a buffet line for the sharks? But I was very impressed with this this humanism that was able to
humanism.
Think. Yep. Isn't it humanity to say, you know what, we're going to save these people.
We're going
to
figure it out.
We're going to figure out how to do it. We're going to be a connected chain and get probably, what, they were about 100 feet out at least. I mean,
well, it took an hour for them to pull everybody out.
I watched the photographic evidence of it, and it's just an amazing.
The thing is, some of the people have been in the water for up to 20 minutes.
Yes.
There was one woman who they believed was having a heart attack as this was happening, and she was essentially saying, just go save the others, let me go.
Yeah.
So this was high drama on the ocean.
Yeah, and I think what's great about this story to me is that people actually came together, because we really need some of that in our lives right now, came together and decided that they were going to do something to help someone. There's so much talk about, you know, people, take care of yourself. Oh, you went out there, now you're just caught up in the riptide. Deal with it, drown.
How about this? How about this?
I like that people
someone
responded.
Posted this, to see people from different, this is to your point, Azenka, to see people from different races and genders come into action to help total strangers, in caps, total strangers, is absolutely amazing to see. People who didn't even know each other went hand in hand in a line into the water to try to reach them. Pause and just imagine that. Pretty good, right?
Yes.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that, Hector?
Well,
cooperation, people working together in a time when all we seem to hear is about polarization, folks.
Well, we live in very selfish times, so I'm actually quite surprised that people cared enough to work together and do something, because we haven't had much of that lately. So from that perspective, it's quite impressive.
So help me with this one. There's new research showing that those who support public displays of Confederate memorials are the least likely to have basic knowledge of Civil War history. Now, put those two thoughts together, right?
Mm-hmm. That figures.
Yeah, researchers asked folks in Georgia and South Carolina two basic questions. First, who was General Sherman? Second, name two Civil War battles. Now, this group can handle that easily. Surprised by the finding here, that the conclusion here, that those who seem to know the least about the Civil War seem to be the most in favor and most supportive of the Confederate displays that are so controversial for so many around the country?
No, I'm not surprised. I think that the least amount that you know about the Confederacy, the more likely you are to support it. But if you actually get your facts together and you do your research and you look at it as a holistic experience for all involved, then it becomes more and more complicated to be a supporter. I'm a Richmond, Virginia native, capital of the Confederacy.
Wow, the Monument Row essentially there in Richmond.
Yes, Monument Avenue. So, you know, I grew up around this stuff, the Confederacy stuff, Daughters of the Confederacy, right up the street, walking distance. I walked past it from my home.
And the mayor there is sort of challenged right now to try to deal with that issue of what to do with the monuments, maybe a plaque to bring further context to the Civil War, something he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are have different ideas about it, but I think that you have to tell the truth and you do have to give context. But the celebration of these Confederate soldiers, generals, and what have you is highly problematic for a lot of people. And so, you know, it's going to take everyone to really decide how it should happen.
Greg, we're still litigating this thing, aren't we?
Well, we've covered, it seems like every time I'm on the show, we talk about the Confederate flag or some kind of controversy. So I'm informed on it. And what I will say about some of the people that that defend the Confederate flag, towards the end of the Civil War, we were not dealing with wealthy landholders or slave owners that were flying the flag. We were dealing with people that were fighting against invaders in their home. So a lot of the like the Battle of Chickamauga, that's one of them, Battle of Gettysburg, so you already named my two right there. But
Battle of Shiloh.
That was in Virginia. So
Greg
that
knows
was
his history.
So those battles were people defending their homes at that point in time. So I do see a little, I can defend people supporting that aspect of folks defending their home. I don't think the Confederate flag is 100% that you are a non-abolitionist and that you want slavery. So that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, but that to see it merely as a historical artifact ignores the fact that it became the banner for racists in the 50s and 60s.
It still is to a large extent, especially worldwide.
Yeah, the recent history, correct me if I'm wrong in saying it because you know more than I, but the recent history, that it is a signifier, not of, oh, I had ancestors who fought and died.
Yeah, and the pushback is always that it's about heritage. It's not about hate.
No, I married into a family that had a couple of, you know, Confederate officers in it. And they would no more fly the Confederate flag than they'd blow up their own house.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. We've got, it gets hot here. It's Friday. We're in the break room just ahead. How did Shia LaBeouf end up in Savannah and in a jail? We know how he ended up in Savannah on a movie, but how did he end up in a Savannah jail? And who is to blame when a marriage goes awry? I'm going to sit that one out. That's next. It's on Second Thought. We just roll through the breaks. We've got so much to say. Yeah, don't hold back now. It's on Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room as we do each Friday. My guest today, Hector Fernandez, professor of world languages and cultures at Georgia State. Natalie Pavelski is vice president for Cater Communications. Greg Williams, mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. And Nzanga Burton is a media and hip-hop scholar now at Clark Atlanta University. And we also want to thank Savannah Coffee Roasters for donating coffee for our guests this morning, as they do every week. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Shia LaBeouf. Shia.
He should have gone to Savannah Coffee Roasters instead of wherever he went.
No, he was out tying one on.
With some Irish coffee, maybe.
When Shia wants to do something, boy, he really does it.
Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just Do it!
Yeah, and this time he might have done it wrong, right? Last week, Shia LaBeouf was arrested in Georgia for public drunkenness. He tried to escape arrest by fleeing into his hotel, because that always works, right? Should celebrities, here's the question, should celebrities get a little leeway, Nzengo, on these things when, you know, everything that happens to them, it's not the same way for us, but everything that happens to them seems to make headlines, or am I making an excuse for it?
That would be a no.
That would be a no.
No. I think that celebrities are people, and, you know, they'd like to remind us when they are just humans like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And so I think if you get arrested for public drunkenness, then you should be arrested for public drunkenness.
Yeah, but this got ugly fast, didn't it?
He has Mel Gibson syndrome. So.
Yeah, this is not the first time he's been in
Natalie,
trouble.
Natalie, it really got ugly fast. Yeah. I mean, he was talking about a black officer who was going to go to hell because of his skin color. Okay, you ready for the next level of this? He taunted a white officer about his wife's sexual preferences, essentially saying that she preferred sex with black men. I mean, it.
Oh, good Lord. Look, this is a problem for him. This is not his first arrest. He can afford a driver, a babysitter, a bodyguard, somebody to keep him out of trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't accept the money and the fun of being a celebrity and then complain about the spotlight that comes with it.
Right. Greg, what's going on with this young man? I mean, I've heard commentary suggesting that he has maybe even mental issues. Mm-hmm. You know, or is this a moment where the alcohol is really his truth serum?
When you've been growing up and your name is a stage name at a drag concert, you're going to have some issues kind of over the years. And now, Shia LaBeouf. I mean, yes. Right.
That was brutal.
I think that he's had some issues for a very, very long time. And he's probably upset that Mark Wahlberg got cast in the Transformers and not him. So it's been a rough time. And what wasn't the movie?
You mean there's an actor who actually wants to star in the Transformers?
Wasn't the movie that he's starring in called like the peanut butter kid?
Right.
Let's talk about that a little bit. My God, that storyline was hilarious. Y'all need to Google peanut butter kid or something. I mean,
have you done that? Have you Googled it?
I have not, but I was listening to 96 Rock or somebody talking about the theme of the movie.
And tell us, inform us.
I don't remember.
It is the break room.
It was pretty. It was a very horrible theme, but I think it was a kid that wanted to be a boxer or something like that. I can't remember exactly. That's y'all's job to Google.
Well, the kid has an addiction problem. So I mean, at the very least, we should feel for him.
Yeah. I mean, that seems pretty clear. Yeah. But here's the thing: the reason that we root for him to the extent that we root for him at all is because he's still young. I guess he's 31 years old. Mm-hmm. He's super talented, right? Mm-hmm. And he seems to be a kid. Hector, to your point, who seems to be suffering from some kind of... He wrote a statement.
He apologized. And actually, it was a very well-phrased apology. So I give him some credit. Like Natalie said, it's not the first time. It's obvious he has an addiction problem.
Yeah.
He has the resources to do something about it. I mean, in Hollywood, we've already seen that before. You know, an actor come back, right?
Right. Oh, so, yeah. Many times.
Robert Downey Jr. comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Like big city star, among other things. Now Iron Man and everything else. So the actor wrote in a statement posted on Twitter Wednesday. Shia says that he has been publicly struggling with addiction for far too long. He called his behavior a new low and attributed to, in part, his complete disrespect for authority.
Now, this was a really good apology, as Hector suggested. Yeah. It was not a non-apology apology. He said,
we hear a ton of those, right?
Oh, don't we, though?
Yeah.
Daily.
So let me transition to this one. This was more of a hot topic last week, and I thought it would get a lot more attention than it did. But in Trump world, I mean, it's just a news cycle for a couple of minutes, and then we're on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Walter Schaub, right, head of the Government Ethics Office, resigned last week, saying it appears Trump businesses are making money off of his presidency. He thinks the ethics program needs to be stronger. So if it turns out, Hector, that nothing illegal is occurring, does it matter if the president profits from his or her tenure?
Absolutely. It sets a very bad precedent. I mean, in the past, we had presidents profiting after they left office. But while you're in office, you should not be doing that. I personally think this administration doesn't care about anybody else but themselves, you know. And it's doing it left and right. It's doing it left and right. And in the world of fake news that we're living, nobody cares anymore because you can't tell between, you know, the truth and lies, which are everywhere.
Yep. So here's something that Walter said. He was asked during a CBS News interview whether Trump's businesses were benefiting from his time in office. And he said, can't be sure. I can't know what their intention is. I know that the effect is that there is an appearance that the businesses are profiting from his occupying the presidency. And appearance matters as much as reality.
Which is why every modern president has, with any kind of complicated financial portfolio, has put his assets in an honest-to-God blind trust. Reagan did it, both Bush's, Clinton. And there's a reason
for
that.
Remind, what has the president done? What has he set up? He set up some structure. I remember the news conference where there were reams.
Of blank pages. They wouldn't let us look at them.
Right. And transferring that power to your sons, who we now know are, you know, and your children that are intricately involved in the administration, you know, it's just problematic. It would be one thing if they weren't involved, but every time you turn on the television, you see Ivanka, you see one of the sons or what have you.
Mm-hmm. And the Secret Service paying to a company.
It's just, it's just too vague, though, this accusation. They might be profiting from his being the president. And is he garnering contracts somehow, or is attendance at his hotel? Tells up
yes.
Because he's become more of a celebrity. Because now, I mean, he already had a pretty high name ID, folks.
Right, but this is the thing. The American people shouldn't have to worry about whether foreign policy is being made on the basis of where the next cheesy Trump hotel is going.
And you know, again, this was very a very vague accusation about they might be profiting because he's president.
But they have been profiting. If you look at the amount of money the State Department
point,
and the
Vegas is going to disappear and it's going to become really concrete.
I'm going to be happy, and when that happens, really when it becomes non-ambiguous, then I will certainly be
about the appearance of impropriety, though. You understand that, Greg.
Well,
you may not be doing anything, but if it looks like it still has
but
consequences.
How does it look like it? Just because his businesses are doing a little bit better because he's now president, if he's not actively engaged in doing that, if he's not tweeting about everybody stay at Trump Plaza next to Chicago, he's not tweeting that.
Look,
so
there's a reason.
I don't think he's abusing that level right now.
I don't see why he's such a special snowflake uber capitalist case that he doesn't need to follow the same rules that all the other presidents have followed. Now, this is the reason.
I do wonder to what extent the public, you know, has baked this in. It's been baked in.
Yeah, because if you look at it, I'll give you some specific numbers, just a few things, okay? During the campaign, as an example, the Secret Service spent $2.75 million to accompany Trump on campaign trips. Now, this is something all candidates get, beyond a certain point. However, he was flying his own private jet. So the Secret Service, i.e. taxpayer money, $2.75 million of taxpayer money went to the Trump Organization to pay for the president's Secret Service coverage.
And Greg, I'm going to give you the last word on this before we move on.
Thanks.
Do you just want to move on?
Well,
and Greg?
Well, we're happy to just move on.
And we're moving on.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing
Let's
to see
just
here.
Just move along.
Okay, a new UK study finds when there is infidelity in a marriage. This is a UK study. Women are more likely to blame the other woman, while men blame their unfaithful spouse. Mm-hmm. Why this difference? Who wants to weigh in first? Who's chomping at that? Hector, hand up first.
Wow. I'll say this sounds about right, because men are really petty about a bunch of things. We can be really petty about a number of things. And emotionally, compared to the ladies, I think we're lacking. So to that respect, there would be a certain tendency for us to place blame within a closer circle. I mean, at least that's my perspective on my own gender.
Yeah.
Well, there's a saying that the first time Adam had the chance, he laid the blame on women. And humankind has been following suit ever since.
That sounds really biblical.
So that would be the genesis of this whole thing, I suppose, right? So,
ooh, well done, biblical quote.
Hey, no problem. I'm a right winger. I should know the Bible, right? But you know, I was thinking that I think we can modernize this a little bit. Let's go ahead and admit the way a transaction would occur, right? A man is always going to be, would you like to have sex? Yes, I would. So to me, the final arbiter or the decision maker, the woman is the one who is making the decision. A man pretty much is always going to be like, yes, 99% of the guys I know, they don't care if it's the first date, the last date, whatever. The woman is kind of the decision maker in this process. So I can see, you don't agree?
Greg,
this is empowering women here.
Negative. No. That's an emphatic no, Greg.
Okay.
No. Okay. Women are socialized to distrust other women by women. By women. That is how we are socialized by and large. And even, and what we hear from generations down, right? If you have infidelity in your family, it's never that, you know, dad stepped out. It's that other woman broke up my family, right? You know, and we are socialized to hate. Like, we are socialized to hate on each other, right? So-and-so has blonde hair. I want blonde hair.
But don't
so-and-so
you.
Has red hair. I want red hair. So-and-so, I'm not going to say, oh, I love your blonde hair. Be like, oh, my God, that chick has blonde hair.
I think I'm far more empowering message for women
but
than
don't
yours.
Don't you love that Greg was willing to go there?
Greg,
if you were just joining
good try,
us,
Greg, but no.
We are hanging out in the break room with Natalie Pavelski, Vice President of Cater Communications, Greg Williams. Greg, mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List, Nzenga Burton, who's a media and hip-hop scholar now over at Clark Atlanta University, and Hector Fernandez, professor of world languages and cultures at Georgia State. Let me see if I can sneak another one in here. Marvel Comics creator Stan Lee lost his wife Joan last week. Now, when Stan wanted to quit making comic books, she convinced him to write the Fantastic Four. How about that? It changed the course of his life. Hector, has anyone in your life given you really good, really solid, let's call it life-changing advice? And then we'll go around the room.
Sure, my literature professor from college, because I'm an electrical engineer, but I went to grad school for Hispanic languages and literature. So I followed a different road. I mean, and it's the best decision I've ever made, you know? My life is rich because of that, and I live my dream.
Why the suggestion, you think? Why was that advice offered to you?
Because basically social pressure, society tries to set your goals, whereas you have to try to find your heart and try to find out what is it that is really going to make you happy in life. And if you're happy with that, you know, things are going to work in the end, and everything will come together.
Yeah. Nzenga.
Yeah, so my mother told me that life is a process. And I remember prior to that, I was completely impatient. I wanted what I want when I wanted it.
I recognize that.
Yeah. I mean, I really thought that if I wanted it, I could make it happen. And just that one thing, like, listen, relax. Life is a process. It made me more thoughtful. It made me more intentional. And I have great patience now because that really, for whatever reason, it just stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So now as I go through life, whether it's personally, professionally, spiritually, or what have you, I exercise that process, that patience, and think to myself, life is a process.
Do you feel the moments when the impatience is rising up in you?
Yes, and then I chant to myself quietly.
You chant?
Yes.
That was my next question. What do you do about it?
Yes, I chant. I meditate.
Yeah.
And then I realized I'm committed to happiness. So someone else told me that too, a professor. But I have made a commitment to being happy. And so I know what that looks like for me. And so part of being happy is not being stressed out and pressed about things that you really can't control and outcomes you can't control.
Right.
And so, you know, I just go ahead and let the process happen.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess, you know, for me, it's never been necessarily one person that's given me advice. I've always been a bit of a risk taker in some of the business avenues. But having
did someone encourage you to do that?
Well, absolutely. And that's what I was about to say. My parents are listening from Marietta right now. Hi, Mom and Dad. But they have provided such a strong, powerful social construct for me that they have basically, you know, been willing to help out if a business went bad. And being in the mortgage business for 15 years, I can assure you there was some down times for Greg Williams. And I was blessed to have a family that was very supportive of whatever I did and very patient with my career path.
Yeah. I'll dive in just to say that there was a moment when I was just starting in this business and I got a great piece of advice from a reporter in Cleveland who said, you know, you just got to be yourself. Whether it works here, it may not work here, but ultimately you got to be yourself and you'll find the place where it works. Natalie, how about you?
Well, my the America's first female Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, was my faculty advisor at Georgetown. And she used to tell all of her women students about when she started in government in the National Security Council staff, the men would jump in and mix it up, and the women would sit there and timidly raise their hand and hope to be recognized, which limited their input, of course. She said, look, first make sure you know what you're talking about, and then speak up and interrupt. And I've been doing it ever since. Sorry, Greg.
That's terrific. And it's helped you in your career path and at various points and stages in your life?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, the biggest chunk of my career was as a journalist a television journalist, which is not exactly the least sexist environment.
We were
environment.
Kind of colleagues
yeah,
over
exactly.
at, yeah, yeah, the big house for
at
a while.
CNN, yeah. yeah, yeah. And as you may know, that's not exactly the least sexist environment to be on camera in, right?
Yes,
it's like,
yes.
yeah, we don't care if it's a fabulous story. Your hair is a mess, right?
Right, right, right.
So you have to be strong and you have to be willing to speak up.
Oh, terrific. Thank you. What a great break room. I'm loving this. Thank you all. We are all out of time in the break room today. And thanks to my guest, Greg Williams. He's a mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Greg, thanks.
Thank you.
And Zanga Burton is a media and hip-hop scholar. Her new address is over at Clark Atlanta University. Nazanga, good to see you again.
Thank you, Tony.
Hector Fernandez is professor of world languages and cultures at Georgia State. Hector, a pleasure.
Pleasure, same thing. And have a
Natalie,
great weekend.
Yeah, you too. And Natalie Pavelski is vice president for Cater Communications. Natalie, a pleasure. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, each and every one of you. And that's all of our time for the show today. We want to hear from you. You can reach us at Facebook and OST Talk on Twitter. Have a great weekend, everyone. This is On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris, in for Celeste Headlee.